Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where, let's face it, you're probably looking forward to this. We're not politics. We're not going to be covering anything regarding the American election. And yes, I am aware we're recording this prior to the election. It's going to be several weeks after. It's still front and center. So you're welcome for this escape.
Probably from the Civil War that erupted.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys have some way of listening to this.
Yes.
We are your escapist podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today starting on a long-form review of one of our people in the alien and UFO community. This person is Stephen Greer.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Chelsea, I've had a lot of trouble trying to figure out how to break this up because Stephen Greer is prolific in how much he's produced and been involved with. So part one is going to be talking about just kind of a linear following of his journalistic side, I think is the best way to put it, with things that he's published, specifically written, as well as events that he's hosted. From there, we're going to go in part two into him being on other shows and, most importantly, documentaries he's produced and other, not events, but retreats that he hosts for individuals to go on. So that's going to be the breakup of these episodes. I think it's the best way to do it, but we'll see as we go. In any event, I will never tell you if it was terrible. So you just have to trust that I've done it right and I have told you the truth.
Hopefully it's not the one that they get. You never know.
We are going to talk about one of the most talked about. I think he is one of the most talked about people in the UFO community in the last 5 years. I think that would be reasonable to say, Chelsea. Do you agree? Really? I think so.
He is out there.
Yes.
Would you say that? Who else would I say?
Here's what I would say. My gauge for seeing how publicly well-known this person would be is what podcasts they've showed up on and how many ufologists have shown up on the Joe Rogan podcast, Chelsea. Tom DeLong.
I didn't just do that as I was about to do. It was a judgment call. I just went with it. I know there have been a few. He gets some alternative people on there.
Yes. But from the UFO community, I can only really think about he's had Tom DeLong, he's had Bob Lazar, George Knapp, and Jeremy Corbell. And after that, I can't really think of anybody.
David Grush?
And Luis Elizondo. Sorry, he has been on there too. So
yeah,
I would say if you're going to know more than five people in the UFO community right now, he's probably a name that you know.
Okay, yeah. I think that's reasonable. That's reasonable. He's been around for a while too.
He has been, and we're going to be talking about that. And Chelsea, I'm just curious, when I say the name David Greer, is there anything particular that comes to mind for you?
I don't want to. I think I just about called him David Greer.
Stephen Greer.
No. Did you? Is that why I was going to
go? Maybe. I think I'm getting David Grusk and Stephen Greer mixed up in my head now. So I hope I haven't put that seed in there for this.
One guy, and I can't remember if it's Stephen Greer, but there is one guy out there that reminds me of Stephen Greer. If it's not Stephen Greer, that is a total fear monger. I don't think that Stephen Greer might be the other guy. So this probably, just cut this probably. But what was the question?
I asked you, what can you tell me about Stephen Greer? What would you say? Dr. Stephen Greer.
UFOs.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. He creeps me out. The guy's always giving me creeps.
I will say,
I know he's the guy that has the near-death experience, so it just like made him like UFOs a lot.
And Chelsea, we're going to talk about it as much as we possibly can, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Before doing this research, what I could probably tell you about Stephen Greer is, out of anybody in the ufology community, he's probably the only one that lifts. He's got some beefy arms. That guy actually takes some care in what he looks like.
He, you know what? He's so creepy looking to me.
Yeah, he is. And he's almost 70 at this point.
He's 70? I guess he almost would be. He's been around forever.
Yeah. Now, that's how I started out. I did my research. I have watched way too many YouTube documentaries, read things that he's written, listened to things that he's talked on. I think I know too much about him now. And I'm delving down these weird interconnected spots I have to finish off on. And that's part two. But at this point, Chelsea, I do have to make a disclaimer just to cover our asses. Because I think there's a chance that something might come of some of the things I'm saying. So it has to be done now. I am going to be reading excerpts from writings that Dr. Stephen Greer has written, which are likely protected by copyright law. I'm not sure. I didn't look into it. I just know that he's made a few statements about them. So I am reading these for the purposes of critique and or education, just to cover everything off, which is a protected use under copyright law. So I am not running afoul by reading these statements. I will be telling you where they come from, and we are going to be using them for particular purposes that are exempt from copyright.
Yeah.
With that, I always like to start these episodes off, Chelsea, with a coast-to-coast biography.
Oh yeah, those are the best.
You have to. It's the best way. You got to start high. So, Dr. Stephen Greer is one of the world's foremost authorities on the subject of UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, and technologies. And in extraterrestrial intelligence and technologies, and initiating peaceful contact with interstellar civilizations. For over 30 years, Dr. Greer has provided briefings for senior government officials across the globe, conducted numerous media interviews, and delivered hundreds of lectures. He has also written 5 books and produced 4 feature film documentaries that have been seen by hundreds of millions of people. Dr. Greer's relentless efforts towards the disclosure of classified UFO ET information have inspired millions of supporters around the world. He is currently working on a documentary for release in spring 2023, The Lost Century and How to Reclaim It. Obviously, they don't update their website that often.
No.
But he's been on Coast to Coast AM at least 29 times over the course of his career. Yeah,
that sounds about right.
And I always have to say at least, because it does that weird thing where Coast to Coast website only goes back like 15 years. But yeah. Coast to Coast has been on since the 80s. So you don't know. And his career is much longer than the last 10 years. So you don't know actually how many times. He also has a fairly successful YouTube channel that he's hosted for 11 years, with the biggest episode he's ever done on that had 4.9 million views. And that was 8 years ago. So he's definitely cleaning up better than we are.
Maybe slightly.
Now, who is Stephen Greer? Well, he was born in Charlotte, North Carolina in 1955. He claims he saw an unidentified flying object at close range when he was 8 years old, and another UFO when he was 18. Now, Chelsea, that's as much as I can get into that, because whenever he brings them up, he's just super vague with those stories.
Really?
Yeah, I can't get better than that. He received a Bachelor of Science degree in biology from Appalachian State University in 1982, and an MD degree from the James H. Quillen College of Medicine of East Tennessee State University in 1987. He was also trained as a transcendental meditation teacher and served as a director of a meditation organization. No idea when, and in fact, that's one of the things in the Wikipedia article, where instead of a citation point, where you know where they have the numbers up there, Chelsea, and you can go check, it says when in brackets in that. So it's something that was added by somebody close to him, but they didn't provide any proof or anything else outside of that. Okay. Now, he received his Virginia medical license in 1989, worked as an emergency room physician for a while, and in 1998, he decided to retire as a physician and just decided to pursue ufology as his full-time career. Now, that's not when it started, but that's kind of when he chooses to move on from being a doctor. Now, I do find it interesting that we still give him the credential of doctor when it has nothing to do with what he's actually doing, but that's what we've decided as a society, so he's got that going for him.
I feel like we didn't decide that. I feel like he probably decided that for us, that he's going to just carry that.
No, sorry, I mean a society in general. If you have a doctorate, it doesn't matter what you're actually
doing. Oh, you're just a doctor throughout life. Yeah, okay.
Yes. And I actually feel like that does lead to disinformation a lot of the time. When you can have somebody with a doctorate in, like, I don't know, philosophy, telling you you should be taking these vitamins because they're super good for your body.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a society, we've decided that.
Okay. Not specifically about Steven Greer. Okay. Glad we clarified.
He's still taking advantage of it, but it's that. Yeah. Right? You get what I'm saying.
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Now, Steven Greer's career in ufology starts in 1990 when he founds the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence to create a diplomatic and research-based initiative to contact extraterrestrial civilizations. Chelsea, you can try looking up CSETI. It does not take you to the CSETI website anymore. I don't know what it takes you to. It's a really weird website. I gotta find it really
IPS
quick.
IPS Geneva?
Yes, the IPS Geneva. And if you type in Steven Greer in their little search box, his name comes up, but like, I don't know what they mean by it. Like, it literally just comes up. It's not anything like he's written. It's just his name is in something.
Institute for Planetary Synthesis. Okay.
And it's just like, his name comes up in that. That's it. And you can't click on anything. It's weird.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But this is where he comes up, and this is something that's big for Steven Greer. It doesn't come up in this episode, it'll come up in the next episode, where we've talked about close encounters before. There are initially three different categories of close encounters of the X kind. There was a proposed fourth. Steven Greer also came up with a proposed fifth close encounter, which is a human-initiated contact and communication with an extraterrestrial life. While he was at CSETI, this came up. CSETI claims to have over 3,000 confirmed reports of UFO sightings by pilots and over 4,000 of what they described as landing traces. The organization uses rapid mobilization investigative teams with the aim of arriving at landing sites as quickly as possible. CSETI has defined a protocol for human-initiated contact with UFOs using consciousness. That's just from the Wikipedia. I could not find the actual CSETI website. It's, like Chelsea said, it's at that IPS Geneva.
But it says, if I search Steven Greer, this comes up, study for Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's an article. It's an international nonprofit scientific research and education organization founded by Dr. Steven Greer.
But that's it.
Dedicated, yeah, but it doesn't say.
You can't find his name again. It's weird.
No, yeah, it doesn't say why it takes you here.
No, and in any event, it's not that important because he doesn't talk about CSETI a lot. It's the next thing that's really his big part. In 1993, Greer founds the Disclosure Project, which is still up and alive today, the website. However, it really just takes you to drstevengreer.com, so whatever. The goal of which is to publicly disclose the government's alleged knowledge of UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, and advanced energy and propulsion systems. And we're gonna talk about, as we keep going slowly, what he means by all these things. Like, don't worry, you're gonna get a good idea of what this guy actually believes and what all those different parts mean. Greer describes the Disclosure Project as an effort to grant amnesty to government whistleblowers willing to violate their security oaths by sharing classified information about UFOs. And Chelsea, in 1994, that seems pretty mundane until that point, right? He founded two things. He's a doctor. Okay. 1994, he's on Larry King.
Okay.
He like gets an hour, a documentary that Larry King's doing, a TV documentary called The UFO Cover-Up. And it's him, Larry King, Stanton Friedman's in it. And it's just basically them sitting outside Area 51 talking about UFOs, which is, in my mind, like mind-boggling that it goes from there, from like he's a doctor to he starts these things and he's on Larry King, like out of nowhere.
That's interesting. Why is he the one that's the contact?
And yes, and Chelsea, all I can do is speculate, but it's not for this episode where I speculate. I'm just conveying how this is going.
Yeah, it gives me some thoughts.
So from here, I have an article that he wrote in April of 2001, just to kind of give you guys an idea of what's happened in the middle part here, because we're gonna, the next step is 2001. So Stephen Greer wrote this in April of 2001. I know this because he signed it Stephen M. Greer, MD, April 2001. Did not have a title. So that's all I have to go for. It's on his website too, yeah. Beginning in 93, I started an effort that was designed to identify firsthand military and government witnesses to UFO witnesses, UFO events and projects, as well as other evidence to be used in public disclosure. From 1993, we spent considerable time and resources briefing the Clinton administration, including CIA Director James Woolsey, senior military officials at the Pentagon, and select members of Congress, among others. In April of 97, more than a dozen such government and military witnesses were assembled in Washington, D.C. for a briefing with congressmen, Pentagon officials, and others. There, we specifically requested open congressional hearings on the subject. None were forthcoming. In 98, we set out to privatize the disclosure process by raising the funds to videotape, edit, and organize over 100 military and government witnesses to UFO events and projects. We had estimated that between $2 million and $4 million would be needed to do this on a worldwide basis. By August of 2000, only about 5% of this amount had been raised, but we decided to proceed since further delay was deemed imprudent given the serious issues involved here. So beginning in August, we began creating the Witness Archive Project. We set out about the task of traveling all over the world to interview these witnesses in broadcast quality digital video format. Due to the severe limitations of funds, this effort was predominantly prepared by myself and a few other volunteers roughly from August 2000 to December 2000. Beginning in late December 2000, I began editing over 120 hours of raw digital video testimony at home, which, just sidebar from here.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Editing testimonies. I feel like you shouldn't be editing that. I feel like you should be releasing 120 hours of digital video testimony if it's so important.
That's true. You make a very good point.
But anyhow, let's continue with this. I should note that I am a medical doctor and not an editor. Nevertheless, from late December 2000 until late February 2001, the 120 hours were reduced first to 33 hours of select testimony and then 18 hours of super select testimony. The 33 hours of select testimony were dubbed to audio tape and transcribed, resulting in approximately 1,200 pages of testimony transcripts. In March and early April 2001, I edited these transcripts into a readable form, which appear herein. I must emphasize that this has been done under the most severe time and funding constraints, working 7 days a week and mostly 18 hours a day. And I thought the emergency department was tough. Sorry, this is meant to be a joke. And I thought the emergency department was tough. Hold for laughter. I share this only to the reader, so the reader will understand that these transcripts and other materials are very likely to contain errors. These include likely errors in proper names arising from the phonetic spelling of such names directly from the transcribed audio tapes of testimony. I apologize in advance for these. The transcripts that appear in the briefing document have only been altered to correct for A, length, and B, grammar and readability. I have assiduously avoided changing the meaning of testimony at all times. Statements in brackets are for clarification. Statements in italics and brackets reflect commentary on my part and are followed by the initials SG. These materials are, as you now discern, are the tip of the iceberg of what we have recorded on digital videotape. That is, from over 120 hours of testimony by over 100 witnesses, we transcribed only 33 hours and then further edited materials down to a fraction of that amount. Moreover, the full archive represents the testimony of only 100 witnesses of the more than 400 identified to date. The edited testimony will be appearing in book form. A portion of it appears in a Disclosure Project briefing document, and only small excerpts and summary bios of testimony appear in this executive summary. We hope in the future to secure funding for a 5 to 6 part broadcast quality video documentary series to be made from the videotaped testimonies we have, as the impact of hearing and seeing these witnesses speak is very moving. As you read the testimonies, remember that it is indeed only the beginning. The rest is up to you. Call and demand that Congress and the President and the leaders of other countries hold hearings into this subject without delay. These witnesses welcome a subpoena so that they may officially testify under oath to what they have experienced and said here. Indeed, the most revealing testimony waits to be seen, since the deepest sources are refusing to come forward until protected through official congressional hearings. This then brings me to my last point. The witnesses who have given testimony to date are extraordinarily brave men and women, heroes in my eyes, who have taken great personal risk in coming forward. Some of them have been threatened and intimidated. All are risking the ever-present ridicule that attend this subject. Not a single one of them has been paid for his or her testimony. It has been given freely and without reservation for the good of humanity. I wish to personally thank them here and extend to them my personal highest respect and gratitude. Please, I implore you, not to let this effort and their sacrifice be in vain. Help us place this matter in front of the public, the media, and our elected representatives so that the full truth may be disclosed, so that those earth-saving technologies now classified may be released, and so humanity may enter a new chapter in its evolution as one of many people in the cosmos. This summary is focusing on the testimony of important firsthand witnesses. We have thousands of government documents, hundreds of photographs, trace landing cases, and more, but it is impossible to include them in a summary of this length. These materials will be made available for any serious scientific or congressional inquiry. Signed, Stephen M. Greer, MD, April 2001. And in May of 2001, Stephen Greer holds a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. that features 20 retired Air Force, Federal Aviation Administrators, and intelligence officers. So that's where he makes it big.
Where is he getting money to fund this?
We will talk about that in the second half, or at least I will speculate about it in the second half. He did work as a emergency doctor for several years, so potentially some of that's coming from there. But I have other speculations, which I will very clearly state as speculation in that episode, as to where the money's coming from.
It's only going to last him so long if he has a little bit saved up.
He talks, he has four daughters, I'm pretty sure, too, that are all born in the late 80s to early 90s.
Yeah, you can't just quit your job on a whim with, responsibilities.
No, and I could not, this is not a spoiler for later on, I could not find anything where he gives me a good enough reason as to how he came into a position to just quit being a doctor and do this full time.
Yeah, you would have to be.
Well, and, he goes from being a medical doctor to Larry King Live. I can't, he does not, in my mind, fully enough explain how point A goes to point B.
I look forward to the speculation in the next episode. Okay. We're missing something.
Yeah. So he has this conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. in May of 2001. Apparently, it was a big deal. He has these people come up and say, we have this evidence that we're not allowed to say. We have these pictures. We have evidence of landings. And we urge Congress to have a hearing about it.
And, how long is this after he's quit his job? Where is he getting all these whistleblowers that are just let's give it to this guy nobody's heard about?
Well, ever since the start, he's had whistleblowers, which I've always found very odd, too. He quit in 97, I believe.
I would love to just, quit my job and be like, hey, I take whistleblower confessions now, but who's going to give me that?
Well, we got to wait for Linda Moulton Howe, unfortunately, to die. Not that we want that to happen, but they're all going to her right now in my mind.
Yeah.
Because she's not asking questions.
Yeah, exactly. I won't ask questions either. I'll take them if I can make a good enough.
Yeah. I just have one thing to say to you. Neat.
Yeah. Anyhow, these are my questions so far.
I have been every time I read more about him, I need to know, how did you get from doctor to here? And why don't you ever, every time people ask him in their interviews and he gives an answer, I still every time say, why? I just don't understand. You even say you've given up so much money to do this. How did you do this? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And no, there's not from everything I've read, there is not an answer.
Unless, like, his wife is quite lucrative in whatever she's doing.
Maybe. I don't know.
Something. Yeah, I wish I wanted
to. And, like, every now and then it comes up. I believe it's his uncle that worked on the Lunar Space Rover. And I'm like, that doesn't add anything to the story. Stop telling me that.
It's come up more than once, eh? Yeah, okay. These are my questions so far.
It comes up a lot on his podcast that he's on. I don't know why.
I wouldn't be so confident. I don't have four daughters, but I wouldn't be so confident just to just quit my job and be like, the whistleblowers, they will come.
I'm going to talk about it a bit at the end, too, just with a bit of my theory with the doctor side of it. But let's get into some of his actual writings.
Yeah. Let's do it.
His website, drstephengreer.com, Chelsea, you can go to it. It's actually set up pretty well for one of these people that we're covering. It's not a 1990s website. I think if you look at it, Chelsea, you'll agree. It's actually like state of the art for the UFO community.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, no way. And sorry, they just updated. He's doing a cruise.
Oh, wow.
And we could go on that in April of 2025.
Is that what this ocean is? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a cruise line. Is this one?
But yeah, you can take a look at this. I said, it's a state-of-the-art website for the UFO community. Like, it has
celebrity,
a playing GIF, a ticking thing where it goes to the next one. It is not a 1990s website. At the top, he has news, which isn't updated all that often. It's literally just his YouTube videos get put there. There also has his films, which we'll get into in the next episode. Expeditions, which we'll also get into the next episode. Energy, which kind of comes up on this episode. Most importantly, evidence and docs. And that's going to be the biggest part of this episode from here.
Okay.
Chelsea, if you go into evidence and docs and go to an overview, it just gives you, not overview. We're going to go to document library. And it doesn't look as great. It is like Excel spreadsheet with PDFs. 8 pages of PDFs.
Abductions. Not all that glitter is gold.
Yeah, and I think that's actually when we read. I couldn't read everything just because it seems ridiculous. And if you click on some of them, they're scans of books.
Oh.
I clicked on Dancing in the Dark, and it is literally from either a magazine or a book, and he put a scan of it in.
Briefing for President Clinton by Stephen M. Greer.
Oh, I should have actually read that one. I didn't read that one.
You think she actually read this? Probably not.
No, in fact, that's one of those things. I've never found a comment from a president that they've talked to Stephen Greer, but he says he's talked to all of them.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I take his word for it. He's a doctor.
Also, I do have to put it out there now, too. He gives me libertarian vibes in how he talks about a lot of things. And you might get that from his writings. And when I say libertarian, I'm not talking about the historical view of a social anarchist libertarian. No, we're talking about the right wing, don't step on snake flag libertarian. Anyhow, let's get back to everything I was talking about. Also, Chelsea, there's a To the Stars Academy article on there too. And it's literally just the bio of everybody who's on the To the Stars Academy team.
Okay, that's weird.
Like, it's nothing else. He has added nothing.
That's weird.
And in fact, I can edit a copy of it if I want, because he uploaded it in Word format.
Okay, so if you click on, like, document category, it has Dr. Greer's papers, interviews with Dr. Greer, letters and briefings, new energy, press releases and newsletters, related papers.
Anyhow, Chelsea, I picked a select few of Stephen Greer's papers to go over. I picked the first one as Secret and Covert Operations by the USA.
Okay.
Brigadier General Stephen Lovkin, Army National Guard Reserves. As a young Army officer, he worked with President Eisenhower in the last years of his presidency. But what happened was that Eisenhower got sold out. Without him knowing it, he lost control of what was going on with the entire UFO situation. In his last address to the nation, I think he was telling us that the military-industrial complex would stick you in the back if you were not totally vigilant. I think he felt like he had not been vigilant. I think he felt like he trusted too many people, and Eisenhower was a trusting man. And I think that he realized that all of a sudden this matter is going into the control of corporations that could very well act to the detriment of his country. This frustration, from what I can remember, went on for months. He realized that he was losing control of the UFO subject, as far as I can remember. That was the expression that was used. Quote, "It is not going to be in the best hands," end quote. That was a real concern. different. And so it has turned out to be, quote, it had been discussed with me on numerous occasions what could happen to me militarily if I discussed this. I would say that the government has done as good a job enforcing secrecy through the installation of abject fear as they have done with anything within the memory of modern man, end quote. One older officer discussed with me what possibly could happen if there was a revelation. He was talking about being erased, and I said, quote, man, what do you mean erased? He said, yes, you will be erased, disappear. And I said, how do you know all this? And he said, I know. Those threats have been made and carried out. Those threats started way back in 1947. The Army and the Air Force was given absolute control over how to handle this, and this being the biggest security situation that this country has ever dealt with. And there have been some erasures. I do not care what kind of a person you are. I do not care how strong or courageous you are. It would be a very fearful situation because from what Matt, this old officer, said, quote, they will go after you, after not only you, they will go after your family, end quote. Those were his words. And so I can only say that the reason that they have managed to keep it under wraps for so long is through fear. They are very selective about how they pull someone out to make an example of. And I know that this has been done. And these are a few of the interviews that he's done. Few things to note, he is not great with his quotations and telling you who's speaking. I've read that several times and I still can't quite understand if he's saying that this guy's telling him a quote from Eisenhower at the time or if he's quoting himself in the past.
Okay.
And I can't tell. And it doesn't say. It does not say who's saying things.
Usually that's an important part of writing.
But to be fair, if I needed an appendix removed, I would go to Stephen Greer. If I needed something well written in English, I might not go to a doctor per se.
Or edited, apparently.
Yes. Don't go to him. So these are the kinds of people he's talking to. Next up, we have a Lance Corporal Jonathan Wagant, U.S. Marine Corps present at a retrieval of a UFO in South America. This is his statement. Quote, you weren't supposed to be there, end quote. Quote, you are not supposed to see this, end quote. Quote, you are going to be dangerous if we let you go, end quote. I thought that they were going to kill me, really. Lethal deadly force has been used. For those of you who don't know, I know Marine snipers and I have heard other guys talk about it. And I've heard that these guys go on the streets and they stalk people and they kill them. I know that the Army airborne snipers do the same thing. They use Delta Force to go grab these people and silence them by killing them. That's what he's decided to display from this guy's testimony.
That's weird.
Yeah. A next witness statement that he gives is Larry Warren, U.S. Air Force security officer present during the landing of a UFO at Bentwater Air Force Base in the UK. We were gone over with a Geiger counter and there was one return on one of the guys and something was taken out of his pocket. Bracket, he had picked up an item from the retrieved craft and bracket. This guy was removed very quickly and I will swear on my life I never saw him again. He was removed. This happened to a lot of people. It led to a suicide that the Air Force is responsible for. This is a real person with a real name. ... It just, yeah.
Is he insinuating that there's multiple UFO sightings at Bentwaters that, I mean...
No, I think this is the famous Bentwaters case. I think he picked a person who was, like, on the janitorial team who had absolutely no connection to the frickin' sighting. And Chelsea, I'm sure you've noticed it at this point, but none of the witness testimonies that he gets give direct information. It's always second or even third hand evidence that he's getting from these people.
That is super bizarre.
Or they don't seem to give specific details. Like the fact that they just said, oh, they can erase people. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, you know. And that's it.
But is that almost like they're being fed information to tell him?
I don't think it's... No, Chelsea, if you're going to feed somebody information, you give them specific information. No.
But it's like, say enough that it seems like you say something, but when you're pressed, just say, be vague about it. Like, are they actual witnesses? Like,
we've seen fake witnesses before in Doty who have given specific details. They give specific details if they're giving fake.
Trying to come up with something that he's just failing miserably at them? And he's just interviewing the wrong people? Or is he trying to get people who seem like they have something that they just won't say because they're saying too much or they're just alluding to the fact that...
Let's keep reading because I got a few more of these and let's see if we can glean any more details.
That's so weird, but I've never heard of any suicides being associated with than Ben Waters with Rendell Shepard.
If you listen until that last sentence, there was no suicide. Let's read this again. This guy was removed very quickly, and I will swear on my life, I never saw him again. That doesn't explain he committed suicide. Outside of him at the end saying it led to a suicide at the Air Force Base, but they don't also say that it was that guy who committed suicide.
No, I didn't assume it was that guy. It could have been anyone.
Again, it's I never saw him again. He was removed. This happened to a lot of people. So they were transferred to another location?
It seems like he's... I don't know. This is weird, though. This is weird that they're not giving information.
No. And if you're taking an interview, if you're actually trying to investigate something, you want specific details. You want to know what they can back up. And what comes directly from them, which is important. Anyhow, let's move on to the next
I've
one.
I've already noticed a few red flags.
Yeah.
Continue.
So this comes from Professor Robert Jacobs, U.S. Air Force, who filmed a UFO intercepting an early ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile test. What happened to the film is an interesting story in itself, as Major Man's... I just feel like this is a fake story because of this major's name. Major Man's Man. Related to me and other people. Sometime after I had gone, the guys in civilian clothes, I thought it was the CIA, but he said, no, it wasn't the CIA, it was somebody else. Took the film and they spooled off the part that had the UFO on it, and they took a pair of scissors and cut it off. They put that on a separate reel, they put it in their briefcase, they handed Major Man's Man back the rest of the film and said here, quote, I don't need to remind you, Major, of the severity of a security breach. We'll consider this incident closed, end quote. And they walked off with the film. Major Man's Man never saw it again.
Poor Man's Man.
You got it right there. Who was it then?
Yeah.
Major Man's Man, you got some splaining to do.
Could have been anyone. Could have been Dr. Stephen Greer and the whatever he works for. Doesn't work for because he has
that,
no
to
job.
To be fair, actually, if he had a fake like soldier alias, it would be Major Man's Man.
Okay, another vague one, right?
It's like alluding to something bad, yeah. But they'll never talk about it specifically.
Yeah, that's what they did in a lot. There's a lot of alluding to something going on. But
next one's Merle Shane McDowell from U.S. Navy Atlantic Command. These two gentlemen began to question me about this event. They were being pretty rough about it, to be honest with you. That's great. Maybe you can explain how they were being rough in your frickin' statement here. Anyhow, I remember literally putting my hands up and saying, quote, wait a minute, fellows, I am on your side, just a minute, end quote, because they were not really nice. They were very intimidating and made it quite clear to the point that nothing that was seen, heard, or witnessed that transpired was to leave this building. You are not to say a word about it to your co-workers and off base.
But what?
You just forget everything that you may have seen or heard concerning this. It did not happen. And this is the paragraph he put in his article on the PDF. Huh? To give you an idea of this witness statement, that was the vaguest thing I've ever heard.
What's the witness statement? It's not that, is it?
They were rough about it, Chelsea. They were rough about it. That's it.
So he didn't actually give a statement?
I don't even know what he saw. That's literally all they gave in that.
Why is he giving this as a statement?
No, to be fair, he ends it with an ellipsis, a dot, dot, dot. So there is more to the witness statement. But, like, he put this in his article of the witness statements that he's giving. So, he thought this was important and good.
No. I mean, that's not good. None of those were good.
Next one is from Dr. Robert Wood, McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Engineer.
What's he a doctor of?
I have no idea. I don't think he asked either, to be fair. Sorry, I speculate because he doesn't ask questions, it seems.
Okay. I love...
He worked in the emergency room with him.
I feel like if I were to go in and just say, like, if I was to conduct an interview and just say, just talk about your experience, I would get better information than he came away with.
Potentially.
Like, by far. If you said, tell me about your experience, I feel like I would get better information than whatever the fuck these guys are talking
And Chelsea,
about.
I feel like you would naturally come to points where you say, like, can you elaborate? What do you mean by rough? What do you mean, like, you never saw him again? Like, tell me what you mean.
Yeah, and, like, what actually happened that they were rough with you? Why did they need to be rough?
And, like, in the weirdest twist, oh, I was actually blinded later that day, so I never saw anybody again.
Okay.
Anyhow, Dr. Wood, as you may know, when you get cleared for one of these classified programs, you wear your special badge and you know you can talk to anybody who's in the room with a lot of candor. And it feels like that's one special psychological group. There's a lot of camaraderie that builds up. And you had access to special libraries. So one of the things that we could do is go up to the library that the Air Force ran and sort of paw through top secret material. Since I was interested in UFOs when I had some usual business to take care of, I'd also look in their library to see what they had on UFOs. And for about a year, I was getting a few hits on the subject about various reports. Then all of a sudden, the whole subject material vanished. Also, like, again, like, you were getting hits. Okay, can you tell us anything about those? Seeing as how, like, you think you would remember if you're in, like, a top secret lab and you just decided to Google UFOs and, like, something came up, you think you might remember what the first UFO like, story was.
Even if it was an article, was it photos? Like, what the hell were you seeing?
Then all of a sudden, the whole subject material vanished. The entire classification for the subject just vanished. The librarian in our group that I was working with said he had been in that vault for 20 years and knew exactly how things were normally done. He said, "This is remarkable." He said, "I've never seen that before. You just don't have a whole subject vanish out from under you." He said, "I think there is something there that you hit on. ... In the meantime, there was one other thing that came about as a result of my association with Jim McDonald, a well-known UFO scientific investigator. I liked the guy. He was really an energetic physicist and would not let any grass grow under his feet. When he got to a case, he would dig his teeth into it and present an overwhelmingly convincing story to professional societies. He would talk to the American Institute of Aeronautics and the American Physical Society, and I happened to be a member of both. So whenever he was in town, I would pick him up, escort him, made sure he felt welcome. So once when I was traveling through Tucson where he lived, I stopped. I had a 2-hour layover to catch an airplane, and he came out to the airport to have a beer with me. I said, "What's new, Jim?" And he said, "I think I've got it." I said, "What do you think you got?" And he said, "I think I got the answer." I said, "What is it?" And he said, "I can't tell you yet. I have got to be sure." It was 6 weeks later that he tried to shoot himself. A couple months after that, he finally died. Knowing what I think, I now suspect about the skills of our counterintelligence people. I think we had the capacity to convince him to do it himself. I think that is what happened. End of quote there.
We haven't talked about any specific sightings or real evidence at all.
We're just looking at some of his witness statements that he's been looking at. Okay, but from this, he kind of gathers what his viewpoint is on this. So
from these witness statements, that doesn't sound good.
From everything he's gathered, just before I got into this, I wanted to give you the witness statements and show you kind of what he's at least showing he's looked into. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, one of those, the one with the library where something went missing, did he tell that in a documentary? Because that sounds familiar. So he definitely uses it as something.
Yeah.
And it's not saying a whole lot.
Nope. We have no idea where he was working, what he actually saw in there, and a weird statement from a librarian, just a librarian in the group, who's like, "This never happens."
Maybe I should hold it to the end, but I feel like he's crafting this in a way that your mind is filling in blanks of what you think.
Yes, and that's not what you should be doing with witness statements.
No.
If you are collecting evidence, you should not have to fill in the blanks. You should have questions stated to show where there are blanks, which are damning to the evidence.
Yeah, and I mean, the guy's intelligent enough to know that what he's doing isn't right.
We can say he's intelligent. Again, I need to emphasize his area of education is medicine, which does have questioning somewhat, but it's not really an investigatory system where you have somebody
who might... No, it's not, but basic bachelor... which he would have more education than that. He would have some sort of writing skill at the very least. But
one would hope.
I feel it would have to be intentional.
What was his bachelor in? Sorry, I can go back and look because it's in his profile.
I would assume like
biology. So he might not have he doesn't have any English in his background.
Okay, fair enough. But to me, you would have to be intelligent enough to know you're leaving gaps of information out for people to fill in, which to me is manipulation. People putting in their own views there for what they think it is. And he's attracting a very specific set of people who are going to fill in obvious answers to what he's kind of leaving out.
So, Chelsea, I agree fully with that, but we're just trying to shape this guy and like kind of come to a conclusion, a viewpoint on him from what he's collected. So he's gathered this information and he kind of gives an idea of what's going on here, because there's something hidden here. I think it's clear from his witness statements that that's what he's focusing on. There is something hidden and intimidated about. Would you at least agree with that? Like, that seems to be what's going on with those statements.
Yes, that seems to be the point that he's trying to make. Yes.
Yeah.
About what information? Unknown. We may never find an answer to what he's talking about.
I think we are going to talk about it as we get going, but here we're just going to talk a bit about like what his viewpoint is on everything. This is in the early 2000s, I believe, might be the mid 2000s, but in any event, it's after he started down this career. So there is secrecy. The group maintaining the secrecy, at least at a policy level, numbers some 200 to 300 individuals from a number of countries and represents a powerful array of interests, including those connected to financial, technological, security, religious, media, political, and scientific areas. In 1993, contacts in this group stated to us that about a third of those involved were in favor of ending the secrecy, and a broad disclosure of the facts as of today, we estimate over 40% hold this position.
That's a pretty bold statement to make when he's like giving no information and he's like, you know, everybody wants you to end the secrecy. Like, he's never even said, like, asked, what is it that you've seen? The question wasn't even asked. They may have the information. We don't
know. They have a secret. Yeah.
Like, he could literally just be holding something back and not stating, like, he didn't ask the question. What information?
Yeah.
No.
And to be fair, like, what he's saying is, I think I'm gleaning this from this, and I would clearly state this in anything I wrote. This is speculation, but that everybody that he's interviewed only has a piece of the information. Like he said, 200 to 300 people have the powerful array and know what's going on. And oh my God, no, sorry, we have to hold that for the next episode.
We can't. So, kind of hilarious. Is he saying, suggesting that we can't have the information that they can't say, just somebody's holding it back?
No, it's a powerful group behind the scenes who knows it all and is holding it back. And the people he's interviewing have little pieces of it, and he's trying to put it together.
He doesn't even know what that information is, though.
He has ideas. He definitely has ideas.
Okay, I don't care about his ideas. He's never asked these people. So it's like you're going to get a witness statement that's not telling you what they're witnessing, and he's forming ideas.
Okay, so what's going on? That's all he says. That's his interview question.
Oh my God. Okay.
Sorry, actually, his interview question might be, hello, how are you? And just like he stares at them blankly.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go edit this down later.
Yeah, it might be J.D. Vance, in fact, and he just says, okay, good.
Yeah, okay, good. Whatever.
How long have you worked here? Okay, good. Whatever makes sense. Oh, God, I hope by this time he's not VP. Anyhow, those who think that such a group could not get away indefinitely with such secrecy are right. We have obtained sufficient actionable intelligence, sources, and documents to make the case. Sorry, just Chelsea. I need to read this sentence again. We have obtained sufficient actionable intelligence, sources, and documents to make the case. We have names, program code numbers, and the location of operations and corporate programs and related vital intelligence. But to whom will this information be disclosed and to what end? So apparently he's not disclosing that part to us, that's for sure, because he gave the vaguest statements he could.
Just very confused about that statement. Do people know what he's actually, like, what he's doing?
I don't think they do. Because if you listen to a lot of the things he says, you should go onto my website where I put all of our evidence. And this is the evidence. Okay. Oh, and this is my favorite statement that he makes, where he kind of gets into legal opinions / advice, which I find hilarious as somebody who has practiced law, does not practice law anymore, and will always make it very clear when I'm not providing legal advice. I am not providing legal advice here. This is a statement from Stephen Greer. Since the secrecy related to these technologies and operations is rogue, unconstitutional, and harmful, any legitimate governmental or international body could hold a hearing at which witnesses and evidence could be presented. Legal and national security experts associated with the Disclosure Project have determined that since the secrecy is unregulated and outside the bounds of the law, the leaders of such projects have no legitimate right to enforce such secrecy. This means that those persons holding secrets are no longer unconstitutionally bound by any past or current secrecy oaths. This assessment has been shared with senior government officials, and to date, no entity or official has challenged this position. Significantly, during the preparation and in the aftermath of the above-mentioned National Press Club event, none of the whistleblowers or staff of the Disclosure Project have been threatened or silenced in any way. We have been able to make a definitive case for the evidence as also for the illegal nature of the secrecy, hence no legal entity can insist on silence.
There's some very concerning things in that. Number one, he can't even take a statement and he's giving like all this legal jargon. Number two, you see this a lot with cult leaders and stuff like that, where he's giving an enemy for everyone to collectively hate, but in a very vague way, which is like the secret holders and they have this.
I find that hilarious, Chelsea, because when he talks about the aliens themselves, they are nothing but love. I'll talk about that once we get to that point. Also, I need to make this statement now before you keep going. I need to get this out of the way.
Yeah.
He's showing that the fact that the US government has not prosecuted them for breaching NDAs as proof that the NDAs are unconstitutional that these people had to sign actually makes me believe that these people didn't sign NDAs that need to be prosecuted. Not that they aren't enforceable.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
They have taken no legal repercussions. Like, literally not.
Well, then it sounds
not like even a letter that says cease and desist.
That speaks for itself, I think.
Not if you ask Stephen Greer. That shows that they agree with his assessment. Like I said, this is used for critique purposes. That gives you a bit of an idea of who we're talking about here, Chelsea. The next article we're going to be reading from him is called Unacknowledged Terror. You'll notice if you click on any of his articles, it's really hard to tell what order they come in. They don't have dates on them.
There's quite a lot of them as well.
There's a ton of them too. But I wanted to kind of, I think this one gets into it, that he both talks about like, you should be fearful of things, but also loving of things, which like you were just talking about, it does kind of give you that culty feel.
Yeah.
So we're gonna start here. I, for one, have foregone a medical career and the mundane, if fleetingly gratifying comforts that life affords, because I came across the at once wonderful and horrible truth that the essential solutions to many of the world's most pressing problems have been systemically and ruthlessly withheld from the public. But there are many who have made the ultimate sacrifice to try and tell the world what we now struggle mightily to disclose. That we are not alone in the universe, that a global and powerful group has hidden this truth from the world, and that the sciences, technologies, energy, generation systems, and propulsion systems that could create anew the world exist in the ultra-secret world of unacknowledged special access projects. There is no doubt that we are dealing with beings who are capable of reading by both telepathic and conventional means our true intentions and motivations, who can sense the, quote, spirit of our endeavor, end quote. Success requires that the spirit of our endeavor be one of scientific openness, the search for truth, altruism, selflessness, harmlessness, and non-covetousness. A desire for the peaceful furtherance of the ETI human relationship is paramount. For these reasons, quote, purity of the motive, end quote, on the part of human researchers and investigators is a primary requisite, while specific skills, expertise, and technologies are important but secondary considerations. The breadth and clarity of our consciousness is imperative and transcends all other considerations. Our obsession with technology and outward things tend to obscure the big picture of the ETI human relationship and all that it entails. A review of the cases to date would indicate that while some actions are enigmatic and even disturbing to some human sensibilities, no evidence of net hostile intentions exists. Here, we must differentiate between our perception of actions and actual intentions or motives, since these are two separate considerations. For a more thorough treatment of this topic, see the case of non-hostility. A seemingly disturbing action may occur for a net neutral or even benevolent purpose. Certainly, as an emergency and trauma doctor, not a day goes by where a child or impaired adult victim of trauma could view my efforts to help him as painful and therefore motivated by a desire to do harm, even though my motives are just the opposite. That a frightened child perceives my actions as hurtful or malevolent is a function of the child's level of awareness and knowledge, and in no way reflects my true true intentions. Could not an analogous process be occurring with ETI events, which conventional wisdom has deemed hostile and therefore as evidence of malevolent intentions? End quote. That's the only part I wanted to read from this. I just really wanted to focus on two things here.
Yeah.
First off, the whole fact that he's saying you need pure intentions to contact or interact with these beings, that really contrasts with the fact that the government is covering up the fact that they have this information, does it not?
It directly is contradicting that, yes, because obviously he's alluding that they're the bad guys and they're against us who want answers, but they have it.
So, if you need pure intentions to interact with them, how the fuck did they get it in the first place?
Would that not...
Either they're not as powerful as he's making this information out to be, or the information that you're giving us is wrong. Those are the only two things.
Maybe he's the bad guy and they're the good guys.
Or maybe the good guy who got it got beat up. Who knows? Yes. They took his stuff.
When you really dig at this, there's a lot of implications to what this guy is saying.
Yeah.
And they're not good. It's not looking good so
far. And anyhow, he talks a lot, too, about how the reason they're hiding this information is because the oil and gas industry run everything. That comes up a lot in his writings. And they don't want to give up oil and gas, so they're hiding this. But that, still, it runs into that problem of how do they know about this? How did they get this technology if they're trying to hide it? They don't seem to have pure intentions.
Let me guess, though, he does have the pure intentions to be running his workshops.
Yes, we're going to talk about the workshops in the second half, though. And Chelsea, this next article is kind of why I've been giving these disclaimers as we go. So this one's called The Foundations of Interplanetary Unity. And in all caps, right at the top of this article, it says, "You have my permission to quote from this information in press releases, periodicals, and speeches. Inclusions in any other media requires my express written permission."
Okay.
I would like to restate that I am using this for a critique and or educational purpose, and therefore it is fair use under copyright law. I would also very clearly like to state at this point that I find it very odd that a man who is fighting against withheld information is himself including a do not share this information statement at the beginning of one of his articles.
I feel like he knows his law stuff, though, based on the other stuff that we've read, so...
I don't think, of course, Chelsea, of course. I feel like he might. Do you know people who are fairly good at one thing and therefore think they're good at everything?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know, Chelsea. Sorry, completely unrelated to this.
I know people who are not good at that one thing, but think they know everything.
Okay. Yeah. Just completely unrelated to everything. It was a non sequitur there. We'll get back to this. Anyhow, this is The Foundations of Interplanetary Unity. There's more to it than what I've just picked the selects that I want to talk about. There are more than 100 first and secondhand witnesses to the retrieval of an extraterrestrial spacecraft and at least four extraterrestrial bodies from a crash which occurred in July of 1947, 75 miles northwest of Roswell, New Mexico. Written and videotaped testimonies from several first-hand witnesses who are respected military officers have been obtained. So Chelsea, he's a full believer in Roswell.
Good. I wonder what he thinks about Bill Moore.
That's a great question. I actually don't know on that one, but there's going to be some names who come up in part two. There are hundreds of credible reports, many with multiple witnesses of humanoids in association with landed spacecrafts. CSETI has in the past 18 months succeeded in intentionally establishing contact with extraterrestrial spacecrafts on two occasions at very close range, and with multiple witnesses present. Numerous U.S. government documents exist which indicate that these objects are real and have been involved with observing Earth for several decades. I just really wanted to focus here, Chelsea, on the specificity of everything he just said. Hundreds, numerous, multiple witnesses.
Yeah.
He doesn't get specific ever.
It's for a reason.
Let's keep going with this article. For argument's sake, let us state that all the evidence available to us in the civilian domain constitutes only 10% probability of contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. Does this not constitute adequate evidence to initiate a serious scientific and diplomatic mission? Certainly in medicine, a 10% probability of finding a cure for cancer will warrant an all-out effort in the cancer research community. For it is generally true that the stakes are very high. The probability of success need not be prior to initiating a research project. Without question, the stakes are so high in this area that even a 10% probability is adequate to mount one of the most extensive worldwide research initiatives in history. which I don't think he's right there. It sounds kind of wrong to say this, but like a 10% probability of this all being true. Is he saying that there's a 90% chance that everything that he's looked at is bullshit?
Wrong. Yeah.
And if he's giving what he's looked at a 10% chance, I'm going to give it way less of a chance from everything we've just read.
Okay. Why would he quit his job as an ER doctor? Like a doctor. I mean, that's
a great question, Chelsea. We would have to ask him.
I see a contact here.
You can ask him, maybe. Anyhow, I just find that last statement, even if there's a 10% chance, if there was only a 10% chance of finding a cure for cancer, you would do it. Now, like, well, I think more has to go into it just than a 10% chance. And who has given that 10% chance?
Yeah.
Is it somebody who's trying to sell a lot of echinacea? And he's saying that echinacea has at least a 10% chance of curing cancer.
I'm speechless. I don't know what to say.
I know. That's how I was through. Chelsea, this guy does so much. And like, I have so many questions that every time, no question ever got answered in any of my viewings of anything. Anyhow, I got one more documentary to watch, so I assume everything gets answered in that one.
Is it called The Answers?
The Answers. Oh man, I have so much to say on that stuff, but this is just his writings. Somebody in his group got contacted by somebody. They received a direct message, Chelsea. So this is, what was the name of that episode that's coming out like right before this one? Channeled Entities.
Oh yeah. I was like, I don't know. I can't remember that.
Karen Ong, who's part of CSETI, actually received a direct message after one of his CE5 events.
Look at us go.
So he wrote this down. July 7th, 2005. Please don't thank me for the message. It was given to me for the group. I was just the messenger. We should simply send love and thanks to our beautiful ET friends, who I'm sure would love for it to be included in the training kit. I am more than happy for you to use any of the information that you need to on the website or in training materials in order to get the message across to others. Here's the message Karen received. Quote, you seek to be ambassadors to the universe? You must first seek to be ambassadors to yourselves. How can you accept us, our differences, if you cannot accept each other's? Honor all life forms. Cherish those who are different, for differences is what enhances life. Seek not proof of life, but honor the reality of existence. See with your heart. Listen to your soul. Feel with your knowing. Many are chosen, few will follow. That's the message she received from a CE5 event, which we're not really talking about yet. I just wanted to include that.
This is a clarify.
And sorry, this is the last of his writings, and this is, I think he elaborates on his 10% case in this. And this is from Abductions Not All That Glitter Is Gold, 1996, Stephen Greer. In looking at the raw data and reports of alleged human extraterrestrial contacts, I would estimate that fewer than 10% of such cases are what they appear to be. The other 90% of cases are combinations of the following. Misidentification of other unusual experiences, which due to the dominant pop culture enthrallment with all things alien, get labeled as an abduction. These include so-called and mislabeled paranormal experiences related to lucid dreams, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, astral body encounters with other non-humans, but equally non-extraterrestrial entities, and similar related phenomena. The need for an expanded cosmological view of potential human experiences should be obvious. It is all too easy to mislabel an experience if you do not know what the possibilities are. The reason is referred to extraterrestrial in the New Cosmology by Stephen Greer for more in-depth treatment of the cosmology. Why he gets into this is because he had a near-death experience when he was younger. Again, Chelsea, I told you I'd get into it as much as I can. That's as much as he's explained about it. He had an out-of-body experience from it, though, and he saw some aliens. So that's why he believes that there's a metaphysical side of it.
Okay.
That's as much as I can get into it. I wish I had more. He tells more about the metaphysical side of it, but like that's literally the whole story on that. Does not explain how he got into UFOs. And probably the most recent thing that Stephen Greer has done is that he had a 2023 National Press Gallery conference again. There is a live recording of it. I should watch it. I have the selection from it. Over the course of the last 30 years, Stephen Greer has provided briefings for sitting U.S. presidents, senior government officials across the globe, and has conducted countless media interviews and delivered hundreds of lectures. He has identified over 700 high-level government and corporate whistleblowers willing to testify regarding the UFO ET issue. He has authored 5 books and has produced 5 feature film documentaries that have been viewed by nearly a billion people. His latest film, The Lost Century and How to Reclaim It, will be released on June 6, 2023. In his unprecedented event, Dr. Greer will be presenting extraordinary cases with live government whistleblower testimony exposing the existence of the illegal secret government, the state of the UFO UAP disclosure in the Washington, D.C. area, and more. Chelsea, the National Press Gallery sounds pretty, like, official, right?
Yeah.
Makes it seem like it's actually something, like, related to the press.
Yeah.
It's not something, like, anybody can just do, right?
Well, that would be my assumption, yes.
I want you to go to www.press.org.
A world-leading professional organization for journalists.
And I want you to look at the ribbon at the top.
Club, calendar, host an event, studios, newsroom, job.
I want you to click on host an event.
Host your event at the National Press Club. Huh.
Anybody can do this. We can literally, if you go about a halfway down the page, you can submit an event request form to just rent the place out. They got their menus of good food. $6.50 beers.
Pretty good deal.
I am of the opinion that he's just renting this out. It's for the persona that it gives to him because it's hosted at the National Press Club, but I'm fairly certain he's just renting this place out for it.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
And also, I have another thing that I wanted to read you from NBC that I think we're going to kind of start to steer it in the part where, hey, maybe he's not such a great guy at this point, because I know I've built him up as such a great character. This is from NBC. Dr. Stephen Greer, who retired from the emergency room to pursue the hunt for aliens as a self-described world's expert on the UFOs, objects to the notion that UFOs should be treated as a national security threat at all. As he sees it, aliens are here to help us, and the military-industrial complex is hyping their danger and creating the U.S. Space Force to prepare for interplanetary war, arguing movies like Independence Day are part of a false narrative created to covert groups striving to generate fear of ETs. A former high-ranking military intelligence official, rumored to have been snubbed in his attempt to obtain sheltered UFO data, insists he never even bothered to look for it. Never, retired Admiral Thomas R. Wilson replied Tuesday when asked if he'd ever been barred from retrieving classified materials, exotic or otherwise, during his career. Wilson, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, was head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 97 when he agreed to meet at the Pentagon with advocates of UFO declassification. Among them, he confirms, was Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. The driving force behind that meeting was North Carolina UFO researcher and emergency room doctor Stephen Greer. Greer was telling audiences about extracting a pledge from Wilson during that meeting to investigate special access projects involving UFO technology. But shortly thereafter, Greer claimed Wilson reported that he didn't have the proper security clearance to inspect those files. As Greer informed a Portland, Oregon audience in 2001, Wilson said, "I am horrified that this is true. I have been in plenty of black projects, but when we tried to get into this one, he was told, I quote, 'Sir, you do not have a need to know. The head of intelligence joint staffs, you don't have a need to know. Neither did the CIA director, neither did the president,' end quote." This story has been circulating on the internet ever since and made it into Greer's book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, last year. But the thing didn't sprout legs until Mitchell began discussing the meeting during what turned out to be a media blitz in July. Mitchell avoided all mention of Wilson's name, but in a July 4 appearance on Larry King Live, the Moonwalker told CNN audiences he'd learned the Admiral had found the people responsible for the cover-up and for the people who were in the know and were told, "I'm sorry, Admiral, you don't have a need to know here, and so goodbye." Now an executive with a Minnesota-based defense contractor, Wilson told The Void he accepted Mitchell's 97 request because he was a former astronaut and maybe had more credibility than some people off the street. Wilson says he doesn't remember who else attended that meeting, but he admitted a certain amount of curiosity about the allegations of a deep black UFO project. "What is true is that I met with them," Wilson said in a phone interview. Quote, "What is not true is that I was denied access to this material because I didn't pursue it. I may have left it open with them, but it was not especially compelling, not compelling enough to waste my staff's time to go looking for it," end quote. Mitchell told The Void he never heard directly from Wilson after their initial meeting, but he says he trusts the veracity of his unnamed sources who told him of Wilson's inability to penetrate security. Mitchell said he was, quote, shocked, end quote, by Wilson's response to DeVoy, who added, "I do not wish to engage him on this matter." Stephen Greer refused to back down. Quote, "I was there and know what was said," end quote. He stated in an email, quote, "I was also informed prior to the meeting that after sending him a secret document with UFO related code names and numbers, that he located one of the compartments, but was specifically denied access to the operation," end quote. "We have identified nearly 500 military, corporate, intelligence, and laboratory witnesses to events and programs connected to these matters. The body of evidence is overwhelming and definitive," he says. That's weird that people that he's talked to and he's stating quotes from adamantly deny anything that was said there.
Yeah, I would say.
So that's where we're going to leave this one off. Like I said, Chelsea, next episode is going to be on the documentaries, the podcasts, the CE5 events, and a little company called Sirius Technology Advanced Research, which is Star LLC, which is going to come up in that next episode, but only for speculation purposes. Now, anything you want to talk about before we end this episode?
No, I'm quite looking forward to it because I already see multiple red flags that I've brought up throughout. I'm looking forward to where it goes. Maybe he ends up being a really good guy who realizes that he's not given a whole lot of information.
As cases happened in the past, yes.
And he's being pretty vague, so hopefully he corrects it by the time for the next episode. And we end on a good note and we figure out what exactly is the secret. I have a feeling we'll never know.
Oh, and Chelsea, I should make one addition here, because that national press conference in 2023 that Stephen Greer had might get confused with the congressional hearing that happened in 2023 with David Grusk. And in fact, Stephen Greer is quoted in articles talking about the congressional hearing. Those are two separate events. And Stephen Greer was not involved in any way, as far as I can tell, with the congressional hearing in 2023.
That's what I thought. But it seems like he's pushing towards the same agenda, but there seems to maybe be some crossover.
A little bit. And in fact, he comments, all of these people comment on each other. So there's going to be some stuff in the next episode, but that'll be for the next episode.
Oh, I'm excited.
And with that, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes, or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.